Okay, what we're going to go ahead and do is get started on the network segment. We're going to go for about 30 minutes, and then we're actually going to break for lunch early, since we thought perhaps we'd have snacks now, but we're not having snacks now, so lunch early is better than no snacks. A quick note before we do that, we've had a volunteer to collate all the notes. The email address is up there on the board. If you are writing notes, if you could send him a copy of the notes, collation and magic will happen, and we'll receive them, and there'll be less work for us. Very good thing.
Wow.
I don't know if they'll spell check. Okay, so I'm going to hand over to Luigi, who's going to talk about networking stuff, and I'll probably interrupt at some point when time gets lower.
Okay. Well, I think I'll be very quick. Basically, my recent work has been focused on improving the performance of the networking stack, so removing unnecessary copies, overheads, moving data towards class and over maps to reduce the need for collapse, etc. Of course, there is a falling code, which is currently supported on only a few devices, so we probably need to add the support for falling to more devices. What I would actually like to know is what people think about this falling stuff, if you have ever used it, if you think it's useful or not.
I think it's very useful, but I'm a bit worried about the interaction with the general time-up scheduling mechanism in the kernel. I've been looking at various ways to improve our timeout, T-sleep, wake-up, clock, event input thingy, without increasing hertz to, for instance, 1 million. I would like to see it have microsecond resolution. And I think we should probably spend some time looking at into that. But
sure.
Having said that, I haven't been able to find a good solution yet.
Okay. So, the next thing I plan to do with polling is to add the support for mixed or mode operations. So, send with the interrupt when the load is low and move to polling when the load is high. So Jonathan probably has something to say about changing the way network interrupts are dispatched, doing them immediately instead of delaying them. And what I plan to do is minor fixes to the protocol sets, like UDP socket buffers are FIFO buffers, but still they're implemented with only a pointer to the head, so inserting appending packets to them is very expensive. I have an implementation of a reliable multi-path protocol, which is called CGM, for which is an LSP now. It's been working for a couple of years now, and so I plan to commit to current efforts to disable people. And some of my colleagues at ICSI had some changes to the multicast API for supporting IGMPv3 again. We can discuss this on the mailing list if there is agreement to spread this in the system. And basically, I have no other things to mention. One thing which is partially related, some of these codes. I've done it for myself. It would be nice to have an easy way for people to test things. So I was wondering if someone has an idea on how to do kernel ports. I mean, ports that include patches to the kernel source tree, and so that can be easily applied and people can test.
Bring on the patch penguin.
So I guess what we need to decide about the session is how structured you want to have this conversation to be. Do you want to talk for a bit more and then we'll fall back to questions, or you want to mix things
I'm
up?
I'm basically done, so...
Okay, that makes it very easy.
Maybe you want to say something?
Yeah, Jonathan has something to say.
Okay,
so maybe what we should do is go to some discussion.
So, Paul raised a very good issue, which we should probably discuss over the next...
There's two things. There's one other issue that I noticed with the networking code, specifically the MBUS subsystem, with our 256 byte normal MBUS, and now most of our stuff is using clusters for like DMA and things like that. People are seeing really bad utilization of memory for networking packets. It's so bad that like for certain application servers that send small little tiny chunks in packets, the people hosting our cluster had to put specific packs to do copybacks for like compression, even though I thought SD compress would take care of that. Anyway, the idea being that maybe in the future we can look at just having, because the weight detractor with 2K clusters and 256 byte MBUS for even a full frame. brain, you wind up wasting on the order of like 7 terabytes of memory.
Those are very volatile data structures. Do we care about them? A little bit of memory for a short time.
You should talk to Peter Wim about this.
Finally!
Murphy feels room vote just to get
oh my god, there's one other thing that I probably should have brought up as one of the meeting minutes, but you know, NetBSD has a whole bunch of very large branches going on at a certain time. And I know that there's this P4 stuff.
This is probably not an appropriate discussion for,
okay,
for this time.
But he was talking about kernel forks. And he asked specifically for how he can put this work in. And I think we should begin a... Let's not have the discussion now, but let's say that we will...
Now departing.
Thomas Master, Germany.
Discuss starting to have a more freer... branching of the kernel. So, you know, you can have your pulling branch.
Yeah, I agree with you. We should definitely have that discussion at some point. Let's postpone it outside of the network discussion. And,
okay.
But I think you're right.
I was just trying to raise the topic so it doesn't get lost in the
Okay. Julian.
I have three questions. Firstly, I have sometimes worried about the flexibility of polling regarding different networking types, like for instance the number of packets you get per second on minimum packets given gigabit Ethernet or 10 gigabit Ethernet that's in the future versus the number of packets you get on a slow PVP link. And I'm worried a little bit about the flexibility of polling on both streams of that using the same polling timing. I mean, you're going to be timing some things, you're going to be polling 1,000 times too many times, and other things you might only just make it in, and some things you might have to aggregate packets.
So, can I answer one? This one will become completely irrelevant once I've implemented the switch mode, the dual mode, interrupt and polling. So, at low loads, you will keep going. We keep using interrupt on those interfaces. And only when the load becomes too high, you switch the point. So I guess it's not an issue. It's not an issue now because the serial lines, we don't support polling on those devices anyway. But if we do that, we will probably have to use one more.
The second question is to do with your study. You work on the TCP stack, try to remove copies and networking stuff. Have you? I know you're
more in the device drivers.
Yeah, but I know you did a stack implementation have you got any intention of evaluating the recent stack for someone?
I actually looked at that in the fall, and the problem was that those patches broke the standard TCP path of the fall.
So is there any chance that do we know of anyone who's working on a stack we can get in? Because it's getting embarrassing now.
No. On the other hand, it's having written one. It's very boring code to write.
It's actually interesting because we waited so long to do this that it's actually out of style now. And one of the things that we're working on is Jeffrey, what's the thing called? The
TCP.
That's the other protocol. There's something called like FACT or something like that.
Okay, there are variations of stack which have different way of generating requests.
Now attending.
Thomas Mester.
That's the thing.
Carnegie Mellon University.
Yeah.
Has it. TCP rate having. You could download the patches for FreeBSD and NetBSD from the PSC site.
Yeah. And one other thing on the performance front, Bosco did a really good job with the MBUF allocator.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I think might give a nicer performance improvement is the fact that for a lot of times the drivers and such, they will do an MGET, and then they'll do an MCL get, and they'll attach them together. And then, you know, so if there was a common function just to do this, it would reduce the function calls, and it would be, because I got him to use a single lock per CPU for the MBUS, the clusters, and the ref counting thing. But what basically has to happen at that point is you grab the STM buff, which locks and unlocks.
Right.
You grab the cluster lock and unlock.
Yeah,
if
yeah.
that was just one function, you could hold it over the entire thing and it would save, I would think, a bunch of cycles actually.
You could probably store some pre-allocated grouped cluster and M buffs.
Let's move to Julian's third question.
Okay. The third question is, there's been some talk in the networking and I wonder whether you have any thoughts on the ability to add metadata to packets by taking the metadata point of
it.
M under AUX and making that a more generic thing than we use elsewhere other than just in the IP6 code.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are certain times when I know you'd like to stick some metadata along with packet size.
I would too.
I think we should make a little decision that that is a permanent part of the system rather than just something that
My major concern was that if you have a very generic infrastructure, you have to scan the whole list or something like that to find the actual data block or metadata block that you are interested in, performance might be impacted. I don't have any special use for that.
I have to
those who have an interest in that to come up with suggestion for Kubernetes.
I think that's something that is worth doing. I know that I've been sticking stuff into struct mbuff in the packet header, and you know I'd really rather not stick it there and
but
change the size of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean
you do have a use for
it.
I've been stuffing stuff in the empty stuff beyond the end of the data. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Julian, are you interested in taking up a sort of to own the task of trying to find a way to store that in a useful way? I mean,
sure. I've already got stuff with Netgraph that does that, so maybe we can make it look common.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be great. I mean, I know that the Mac stuff that I talked about after lunch also needs to place additional stuff associated with each mbuff at various entry points, and having a generic way of doing that would be really great for me.
With each packet or each mbuff?
I'm sorry, with each packet, so it'll be in the mbuff header.
Yeah.
The packet header. Okay.
But you can see the impact of SMP and policy.
So right now they're incompatible. Not because of any particular reason. I just want to make sure that the kernel doesn't compile if SMP and polling are defined together. The thing is that I have only one polling loop basically, and to have polling loops on different CPUs, I would have to have locking around the polling loop. But then again, the network stack right now uses Giant. So, what is the point? When we move to a finer grained locking scheme for the network stack, then we might reasonably reconsider the thing.
Yeah,
but right now, the whole idea of polling is that you make sure that every packet you grab from the interface is processed to completion, at least within the kernel. I find no motivation now to try and support SMP when we still have a single lock for the entire network.
Okay, were there any more questions discussed? I know that later on the day in the SMPNG section of the meeting, we're going to discuss fine-grained locking of the network stack in detail. We would like to discuss it in detail. Assuming that we can find somebody to do the work, which is, we'll discuss later. Are there any other general issues with the network stack which we discussed at this point that are not related to the fine-grained locking?
Yep.
Go ahead.
I would actually like to hear to what extent or in what capacity we want to use the NetGraph code, and I would also like some feedback on our two inherent dysfunctional APM stacks.
Anyone have any comments on either of those? Warner.
I see no problem with losing the KCM stacks that don't work. No, I'm wearing a different shirt. But I may be a little biased.
Well, do they give us any functionality that's not in the other ATM?
The problem is none of our ATM stacks work at the moment. One of them you cannot get hardware for. And the other one, the drivers have been disabled for well over a year because somebody didn't do whatever PCI new bus screw was needed.
Okay, let me just go to Greg since he raised his hand.
Yeah, I think just losing them could get us in a bouncing situation where you take it out and suddenly the ATM developers sit up and take notice and put it back in again and let it die again and somebody takes it out. I think it would be better to maybe try to encourage people to fix things before just losing the drivers.
Yeah. So this shouldn't become a discussion right now. Let me just say, this should not become a discussion of the methodology for handling developers. I think there are some technical issues that can be discussed relating to his point, relating to ATM, and one of them is the duplication of code. The one that will ever work.
Not even that. I'm wondering if ATM is an interesting avenue for previous. It would just say, drop it, because ATM is not being deployed anywhere.
Maybe we should have a separate section, but we need to talk about this some other time.
Actually, if I could...
Yep.
Just turn around and can't find it anyway. The one thing I would want to keep ATM in the system for is that people start using FreeBSD to do DSL, right? Because ATM is how you're going to do it.
I don't think anybody can afford to do that.
Justin,
what about the DAFS stuff? That was all done on ATM adapter made by Emulex. Of course, it was on previous E4.3, I think. So there are people that are interested in using this stuff. Maybe the guys doing DAFS will maintain our ATM stack.
Julian.
I think part of the problem is, Paul, that you said, well, it hasn't worked for a year. Well, it hasn't worked for a year in turn, but that's because the number of end users using a particular feature is small, then it becomes a statistical improbability that there is actually a developer using that particular feature, which means that there are features that the developers which are in use in the community but not in use in the developers. So since our end user community doesn't use 5.0, they tend to use 4.3, 4.11, 4.2. We do have a danger that, you know, if we just lop it out, then we cut off their method of going forward.
That's fine, but it's a perfectly valid point. But it leads up to the question, so who's going to fix it?
Well, first we have to try and find some of those people who are using it.
The ATM list is somewhat active. You do see traffic on it, so those would be the first candidates.
There's two different ones. Remember, we have two different stacks. We had the chart Prana stock used by the Japanese community in IP version 6, or at least was, except I think all of them have migrated to NetBSD. And we have the Hawk ATM stack, which supports all these weird protocols that nobody seems to be running anymore by ATM network.
Well,
I'm not aware of any users of the code.
Okay, so
all the people I used to know that use our ATM code, one or the other, I've not heard from for a very, very long time about ATM.
So it sounds like there's an action item to come from this, and probably the action item is to query the ATM list and find out what they're doing really, and maybe whether we could borrow some of their cycles to address what they might perceive as a problem in the event that we did take out either or both of the implementations.
I can probably find ATM cards for both of our stacks if there's anybody who wants to pick it up.
Okay.
I think it's also a valid point that we want to be careful about ripping it out if there are people on the fringes who are playing with DSL cards that might be going to use it.
Maybe we could put a call out to request a ATM developer from the email and say, hey, you know, we're thinking about ripping this out, but if you have a strong desire to maintain it or have patches in, you know,
make it work for you.
What do you call it? Then you will have an app previous email and, you know, previous ATM, you know.
Okay, so I think the action item is to query the existing community of users and see where we take it from there. I think we should probably move on from the ATM issue. Warner, do you want to?
I have a new item.
Okay.
One of the weaknesses in our current network stack is that it doesn't support removable devices very well. If I eject a PC card and do an inst attach, usually it works great. Unless I have MBUFs or there may be even a few strained braces that lead to panic that are impossible for me to reconstruct. Does anybody have good ideas on how to attack this problem, or is this, I guess that's my question.
Okay, does anyone have any thoughts on that? I have some thoughts on that, but I'll wait. Peter.
Microsoft has a good solution for that. You have to click a button before you eject the card. Otherwise the system might crash.
Okay, so actually, there's a useful comment on that one. Part of the problem related to this, I mean, so part of what causes the failure in this situation is that there's an ifnet struct pointer inside of each mbuf, and if you have an active mbuf and the system points to the ifnet, and you release the ifnet, potentially it may start to point to other things.
The routing table has a problem too.
Yeah, one of the reasons why this becomes a problem is if you use things like DummyNet and you have mbuf that lasts a long time. One of the reasons why failures are relatively infrequent normally is that often memdocs don't last a long time, and you're relatively lucky. We do need a long-term solution. Unfortunately, right now, if you ifconfig the interface down, which is what some people have been using as the equivalent of the I press the button to say it's going away, those mbuffs will still persist, and I don't know of a way to flush them from the system. So I don't think you can flush the mbuffs. We'll need to find another solution.
Also, Microsoft doesn't require you to push a button to eject a USB device, and we have USB network cards. So that's only a partial solution.
Let me go to Luigi.
I think Luigi is next, but I just wanted to point that out. So, one thing is that you could try to fix the ISM structure like somewhere in the market.
It's in the soft C right now. It's in the soft C in many cases right now. I have to move out of that. But yeah.
No, but even the entire soft C, I mean, it's not such a big thing. And since you have to do things manually, there's only a certain speed you can achieve. And really, so I'm not so worried about memory itself.
The reference count is two anyway.
So the other thing is that Dummy says that this mechanism to scan all the mbuffs in various loops whenever you delete a pipe, etc. So basically, you could, it's expensive, but you could call this every time you check a card or a network device. And we might try to extend that to socket buffer.
Did Alfred? Do you have something you want to say?
It was pretty much that. I mean, the device drivers themselves have to be a little bit more robust. Like you brought up in your talk, where they realize that they're getting some absurd value back from this device, and it'll, let's say, time out for like 56 hours, like the wireless cards used to. A little bit more robustness in the device code would help that. Being able to keep that ifnet around seems like a proper solution for that.
Let me go to Julian and then.
I actually did some work on adding reference counts to all users of the IFNet net structure at one stage. It was, I think, previously 3.2. It was checked in, large amounts of it was checked in on a branch. And then I had a disk crash and I lost like some of it that I hadn't quite got checked in yet. But it did at that time I had reference counts on IFNet and I added reference counts on every mbuf that was pointing to the structure, every IF adder that was pointing to the structure, and I reached every route that was pointing to basically reference counted everything. I found absolutely no difference in throughput and speed in doing that. It didn't seem to produce any problem. Of course, there wasn't like mass mutexes going on in the system or anything, but it didn't seem to add any change to the speed. But it certainly managed to help me reduce a few crashes that I was getting on certain operations.
There's another thing. I mean, you don't see any difference in performance at low load levels. And these things become very important when you
separate the boxes. Well, at that stage, it was much lower speed than now, but it was
hardware.
For instance,
I mean, just removing the copies in the device driver doubled the speed up. The software speaks to when you see the box. Though, I mean, nobody has problems with the VC driver doing the extra copy or
If the ifnet is in the cache, it probably won't hurt you very much at all, but if it's not in the cache, then you may be doing some other things. The other thing is, we may want to defer part of this discussion to the SNPNG discussion, because I would tend to agree with your assertion that in a pre-SNPNG world, I would not anticipate any serious or even noticeable performance difference, but it may be that if you start adding atomic operations to handle rep counting, we may start to notice that, and without a strategy for the network stack, it may be hard to decide whether this is a good thing to do. But there was a question also up here, with George.
That's much question. It's only a comment, I guess. one of the ways to handle this is a bit more work, unfortunately, but certainly
one of the ways to do it is to actually have a root never goes away IF interface, which then manages a set of interfaces under it, and that's how people do VLANs and things like that. And that's certainly how people would use this current stack with a different driver model to do that kind of thing.
You change the ownership of all the inboxes. What exactly?
Well, there's a single IF mesh that controls the removable devices,
okay.
Right? And so that never goes away. And then it communicates with the rest of the device driver, and that device driver disappears at once. And that would look less changed. We wouldn't have to change it for FXP or something that was just, well, something that wasn't being plugged in enough. That's one possible solution.
FXP is a card bus card.
Yeah, let me go to Pohani.
Are we closing? Are we done with this item because this is a new?
We're going to rapidly come to an end. I think just before we go to it, then, is there any last comments anyone wants to make? I think the rep counting sounds interesting. Terry.
There's a number of issues. Are you talking about closing networking, or are you talking about closing?
I think we're not closing networking. We're closing the issue relating to the system crashes because I ejected my PC card.
Is this comment with regard to that?
The normal way of handling that is to set up virtual interfaces,
yeah,
which shadow the real interfaces, and then deal with it that way, as Steve suggested.
Yeah. But one element of that might be actually another way you could try looking at it would be that IFNet is no longer part of the SOC, that IFNet is owned by the network subsystem, and device drivers say, "Give me an IFNet," as opposed to, "I have an IFNet."
Yes.
Not necessarily, because we wouldn't have to abandon the device-specific name scheme merely to provide control of
it. Yeah, I mean, the semantics would be identical. The data would just be in another place, owned by another.
It's sort of like I want an IFNet for FXP0.
Yes.
If there's a dead FXP0 IFNet,
I would like to reuse it.
Return the back.
That
seems like a little better way of doing it.
Yeah, because it's a different thing.
This ties into another issue about how we look at our interfaces. One of the things I really hate about FreeBSD is I can unplug my twisted pair Ethernet cable and nobody notices in the machine.
Yeah.
I think the appropriate action for Ethernet is a loose carrier is to call IF unroute, because that would allow us to discover alternative paths using KC or whatever routing even we're running.
I think this came up on a mailing list and there was some discussion. I'm not sure everyone agreed.
Garrett Wallman hated that idea and therefore it was squashed at that time.
Yes.
No longer.
And I hate Garrett Wallman, so I would like to...
Is Garrett in the room?
No.
He
made the decision.
He could well be online.
I just want to hear people. I mean, the previous is supposed to be a decent routing platform. We need to do something when we obviously know that the interface doesn't work. There's no point in OSPF having to take 60 minutes to find out they've never got a packet.
Oh, okay, Jose. So I'm gonna take the responses to that one at a time. Peter first, please.
Yeah. The problem isn't leading around. It's a way of informing the upper layers that something has gone wrong or carrier's lost. We actually need more routing messages so that the upper layers can make that decision.
Yeah.
If somebody wants to make it so that if I unplug my Ethernet cable and move it to a different port and I lose all my static routes, I'm going to kill somebody.
Yeah, okay, so I'm going to take the momentary privilege to make a comment on that, and I think that that's a mechanism and allows you to implement the policy tool Henning has suggested, and I kind of like the mechanism. Let me go to Nick Faye now.
Upper layer also includes DH clients because I hate it whenever I put my notebook to sleep and wake it back up again. I have to kill and restart DH clients, so it also goes into user space as well.
Okay, I'm going to take the next comment. George.
The comment about routing messages really actually is the only way to solve the problem in the current TCP/IP stack. You have to have the device driver talk to someone and say, "This has gone away. Send a new routing message."
And that's what IF under unroute actually does.
Okay, let me keep
doing a couple of things.
Okay, let me go on to the next one.
I really don't want the device drivers to do things like change the routes. I think it'd be much better if we have an app call to user land, so we can take all sorts of different actions when things like this happen with drivers. Not just somebody unplugging a cable, but all sorts of different activities that affect drivers. And it really just comes into some of the DevZ stuff. I think there's such a get to user land.
Okay, let me see if there's anybody else who has comments before we go back to Paul. Yeah, go ahead.
One quick comment. I was involved on the networking stack rewrite while I was working at B, and the way we solved the DHCP interface going up and down because I put my laptop to sleep and we could have a problem was that we just had the user configure all of the interfaces, all of the ports that they would potentially be on, or rather they collected over a time period, and then we brought the interfaces down when, like, the network cable wasn't connected, or, you know, DHCP or that implementation was part of the protocol stack. So when it couldn't get an address, it brought the interface down. And the routes reflected that, because if a route routed to an interface that was down, the route became an address.
Okay, so before we go back to Paul Henning, I get to make my comment, which is...
A lot of people are making a wrong assumption here.
Okay, I'll accept your comment.
The kernel that can do this is a matter of changing a device driver to actually use it. The routes are not going away, they are being marked as down.
Yeah, see, that's what we did indeed.
I mean...
And the rest of the code is basically just... It just kind of works.
Yeah, I mean, I have a local hack that does this for my Ethernet card, and I see where I'm using it. But I'm asking, why don't we do this in general?
Because you haven't committed it.
Because you haven't committed it. Because I got beaten down by people when I said
Okay, so let me make my comment, and then we can take another round.
We can discuss it on .net, on -net, and if everyone is in agreement, we'll just commit it.
Yeah, okay, so let me make my comment, and then we'll finish it up. So my comment is that I don't know very much about the API call you suggested, and if it does the inactive thing, I think that sounds great to me. I think we still need a routing socket event so that userland processes can listen on it.
Yes. Mike IP discovers and does the right thing.
Okay. Let's see if we have... Jonathan Lemon is going to tell us that KQ does it, but go ahead and tell us.
Just was talking about getting an event whenever network interface goes up and down, like you plug a cable, you get carrier. Currently, anything that uses the MII bus already supports that. So also it generates a KQ event, not a routing event. So, however, that could be changed. So instead of generating a pay event for user space, you could generate a routing event. My point is that the support for already detecting carrier and generating events is already there.
Okay. Let me go to Matt Dillon, and we should really start wrapping.
I'd like to say that having a carrier loss flag an existing route, I think is a great solution versus deleting it. Definitely don't want to delete it, but flagging it, because then, at the very worst, we would have syscontrol telling the system what to do with those routes, ignore it or black hole it. You know, so I think that's an excellent solution, and Paul should commit it if that's what it does.
I must say, I'm looking forward to my notebook doing the right thing when I pull the cable in and out. How are we doing time-wise on this session?
Robin, I would like to re-raise the NetGraph issue. I didn't like the way everybody looked into the table when we mentioned Julian's code. What is the future of NetGraph in the tree right now? We have very few users of it in very fringe corners.
I'm not sure.
And I feel either we need to decide whether NetGraph is going to be the doing web things in 3BSC's network stack in the future, or we need to decide what exactly the role is.
Well, what will probably happen is it'll get ripped out, and then you will implement totally exactly the
same. No, I'm not going to.
Okay, so let's make this a structured conversation. Rather than sort of...
My point is that some parts of NetGraph which are still not done, and I'm not going to do them.
Well, what parts are not done?
Wasn't there a bit about the configuration issue that's still not quite entirely done? I think the PPP module is still not quite stable. The
PPP module's been in production use for 4 years. What's the problem with it?
That it goes up and down all the time when it's not
in production.
No.
Okay.
MPD NetGraph is great for PPP for one of the things, but it has production restart.
I don't really want to have a long conversation about whether the code works or not. I think there is a legitimate question as to whether more existing facilities should use NetGraph if NetGraph is our general extensibility framework. If anyone has anything interesting to say on the topic, I'm certainly glad to hear it. I think that the comment that NetGraph may not be widely used, I've seen a number of papers published using NetGraph and a number of proprietary implementations of a variety of hardware devices. Embedded devices using NetGraph. So I think people are using it.
NetGraph is extremely useful. It allows you to rapidly prototype things. It allows you to drop in modules and do nifty things with packets. It may not be the most optimized interface, but that's because it's very pluggable. Bill Paul was able to get Ethernet channel bonding done in like a week using NetGraph. So I don't think it's something that we should necessarily break out. I think though. And this goes for a lot of the APIs in the subsystem. It needs to be documented. It needs to be a little bit more bolted down, so we don't have to worry about it changing bolts that much. Although NetGraph, I haven't seen
very many changes, so it's actually just an example.
It's, it is bolted down pretty much.
Yeah.
And the changes, that I changed it for 4.0, I mean for 5.0 for SMP, but I left the interface basically the same. I had one change for the ABI, and from the user point of view, no changes. So, I mean, I don't think there's any problem with that. We could do with some more documentation, but every module has a man page. There's a man page for the overall system. There's a page on Daemon News, an article about how to use it. There's a separate article in the doc somewhere about how it works. There's not much more we can do except give more examples in the examples directory, and every time we come across a new one, we add one. So,
I mean, it just seems to be a very good...
Okay, so I mean, it sounds to me like I'm largely hearing a consensus there. Are there any further comments you would like, Peter?
Originally when it first came up, you said that it wasn't particularly meant for high speed, wasn't particularly designed for high speed like Ethernet, gigabit Ethernet.
Turns out it actually handles that fine. I was just being cautious in my statement.
So I guess the real question is, do you see it in the future sort of being used in the front end for every network interface at some point, or is it sort of really meant to be a fringe kind of thing?
You could do that, but I think it's unneeded, you know?
As I said, it's good for prototyping, but then once you actually, you know, build what you want, then you can hard code it in for the additional performance, not doing the linkless walking of the nodes and all
there
that.
There are certain things that could be done, you know, I mean, there are certain things that could be done to replace other things we have with a more generic NetGraph thing. For instance, the synchronous TCP code that we have in there could be quite easily replaced by the TCP code in NetGraph, which would mean that you, by adding a NetGraph interface for everything that uses it, and that means that anything that uses that could then be switched over to use Cisco HDLC or RAW encoding or frame relay or so on without actually having to change anything. But you know, it's hard to do that if you don't have the hardware, and you know. There is actually a NetGraph interface on the ISDN code, so I don't think anyone's using it because no one does. Just the two user communities have no intersection, you know.
Let me go to Nick Sayers.
Yeah, if there's one thing I'd like to see from NetGraph, I'd like to see the empty NetGraph configuration file become a lot more like user SDN-TDP with an eye towards replacing user SDN-TDP with
the other way around, actually. I believe it's the other way around. Brian.
Oh, yeah.
Actually, Brian has been toying with the idea of making user SDN-TDP take over functions as MPD. Archie actually has no major objections to doing that.
We're violently in agreement then.
Okay.
The only thing that I hate about MPD NetGraph is that I think that the configuration of it is much less friendly.
This is a less general architecture issue. Let me go to George, and then we should probably wrap up on that issue.
So I'm going
to
ask something wildly heretical, which is, has anyone considered using some of the stuff that NetGraph does to handle all the SMP problems you're about to have in the network stack? I know you and I have talked about it, but I figured I threw it up at the table like a thing.
I thought it was too radical an idea to raise it to light circles.
Yeah. Well,
it probably worked, but I'm just afraid of what the flag would get.
I think it's a good idea. I discussed it with Doug Robson when we were at Usenix, and his issue was performance, but I think it would solve a lot of the SMP problems of the network stack if we moved to NetGraph.
Okay, are there any other comments on that topic?
Just one. I'm a refugee from a system that used, so it's streams-based, but it had like TCP and IP and everything like that as streams, and that was an interesting but scary solution to have everything as sort of modules on something vaguely on that system. But we should be a little bit careful not to make the same mistakes there, because every single packet that went through the system involved no less than 6 or 7 or 8 sort of queuing and dequeuing operations. So don't think it's the same as NetGraph, but it's something to be aware of, that we don't make that kind of blunder.
I was a refugee from the same kind of system, and I did not do that.
Okay, let me go to Terry, and I'm really going to.
I think it would be very hard to, for example, take the Rice University work and on lazy receiver processing, or Jeff Mogul's original work from back in 1992, and make it work in the context of NetGraph, where you're processing interrupts to completion. I think that would be very difficult. The value of processing interrupts to completion is going from, for example, in a previous D4 free system, 7,000 connections a second to 22,000 connections a second, more than a factor of 3.
There's a couple of intermixing things. Firstly, yeah. Luigi is just facing the same thing with his code. He's talking about moving from processing to completion.
But that's not the same thing. It's not the same thing. They're not intersecting domains. We do would say the same thing, right?
No, I try to understand. I just move the paper, and I think I'm doing exactly the same thing. We're processing packets to completion within the kernel.
But Mel hit Aaron's paper, not running NetISR.
Mm-hmm.
You're running it as timer interrupt.
Yes, it is. He's also got code to not use NetISR. It's on the
people. I'm talking about code which takes the interrupt.
I have code that would take the all of the NetISR to know that. That works best when you're saying that ISR for TCP or IP, and you put it on ICQ, and we place all of those calls with a single call, which does either queuing to that ISR or direct dispatch based on its system call.
Well, that's actually what NetGraph does, but it does it dynamically dependent on whether or not you can gain the lock on the module in question. It will queue if it can't gain the lock on it, and if it can gain the lock on it, it will just throw the packet straight in, and then read a write lock so you can have actually multiple packets in the protocol at the time.
How do you manipulate a queue state that is on one?
Just read the code.
Okay, I'm going to have to bring this discussion to an end. I think it's a very interesting discussion, and I think it's probably something worth discussing more on net. There does seem to be some consensus that it's a somewhat radical concept to move purely to NetGraph, but it's certainly something I would encourage people to experiment
but
with.
Rather than moving to NetGraph, what I would like to do is to use the queuing modules from NetGraph to at the bottom of the protocol stack to allow us to safely to use the SMP capability that I built into NetGraph to extend through the rest of the
Then we can bring that up in more of a discussion later when we talk about SMP.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, so I think that's... we've reached the end of the net time slot.
Yeah.
Okay, net, this is the end of net.